Well, it's Thursday, and that can only mean one of a couple of different things. Number one, it means it's the day before Friday, and the legislature goes home ostensibly for the weekend. It's also the day that we do perspectives here on WFSU-FM, and so glad that you're on the other end of the radio waves to be a part of it that way. If you'd like to communicate with us telephonically or any of the other multitudinous ways we have of getting that information and that connection back and forth, it's 414-1234, the local number, 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, we also have an email address, perspectives@WFSU.org. And if Twitter is your preferred form of communication, that's at WFSU Perspective. You know, for more than 3.5 decades, readers of the Tallahassee Democrat have been informed, enchanted, and occasionally infuriated by the writings of Gerald Ensley. This is a guy with encyclopedic knowledge of the capital city and its history and its people and the so many bet-you-didn't-know stories that come out of this neck of the woods. And that's been kind of the primary grist for the bulk of his journalistic musings. And now, a few months after departing the day-to-day operation of the paper and well on the mend from a pretty scary medical situation, he joins us this morning on Perspectives along with his beautiful bride, the lovely and talented Dr. Sally Carioth, no stranger to these airwaves, she. So, Gerald, good to see you. And you're up and around and moving. How you feeling?
Feeling great, Tom. A very, very lyrical and informed opening there, and although you do know that Spanish moss is a parasite.
Of course, yes. Many things in the South are parasitic, but that's right. Okay. We love them anyway.
That's right. I don't mind being compared to Spanish moss.
And Dr. Sally, it's so good to see you again.
It's good to be here, Tom.
And full disclosure, Sally Carioth and I go back many, many, many years. We were talking off the air before the program began of her foray into radio back in the old days at WTNT AM when you came in. I think Wednesday was your day, wasn't it?
Tuesday and Thursday. I started
Tuesday
on Wednesday
Thursday.
And then
uh-huh.
Tuesday, Thursday, 10 to 12.
Uh-huh. And that was sort of one of the very first operations in town to have a regular local person to talk about not just psychology and grief counseling, which is, of course, your bailiwick, but a bunch of other things, too.
Whatever was going on, we did a call-in show, usually a guest. In fact, how I met him.
Well, tell us that story. He just called in out of the blue, or what happened?
No.
It's actually the second time.
Yeah, it's the second time, but it was the more impressive time. when Pablo Lopez was killed at a football player at FSU at a dance in the middle 80s, he called to say, how is this going to affect the team? And he did an interview. Maybe a couple weeks later, I had a guest schedule who called and said, I can't come in. It was fall. It was football season. And I'm ready to go on the air. And I call him at the Democrat, and I said, at the time he was writing sports, can you come right now and be the guest, and we'll talk FSU football. And he arrives, and it was this great show. More callers than I've ever – of my two listeners, both called several times. And he – of course, he was great. And he talked FSU football for 2 hours. We had callers from many other places. Lee Bowen used to be the – you know, I was the bane of his existence. I would come in as I did today, just as my theme music was playing.
Lee was your producer.
My producer, right. You all remember Lee from FSU baseball.
The voice of FSU baseball.
Baseball, yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And we're coming up on a scholarship for him, which is important for us to remember. And after it was over, I asked him a very important question. I said, do you like Christmas? And he said, I love Christmas. And the rest is history.
Oh, my God. And you guys been married for how long now, Gerald?
Well, we've been together for 30 years.
30 years.
We've been
30 years, baby.
30 years, what you say. Yeah, Christmas is still a big deal, as anyone knows, at our house. The garage has upwards of 60 of those plastic tubs full of decorations. This year, because I did have surgery and was unable to do it, she took down most of the boxes and put them up. So we had what she considers a limited Christmas in that only about 10 or 15 of the boxes were used.
Now, I was going to say, though, I saw the postings on Facebook. You do a pretty nice job there,
Well, that
Sal.
Was, but that was a nothing job. There were only 5 or 6 trees rather than 12 or 15. So.
Well, Gerald, do you miss the day-to-day stuff at the Democrat, though? Starting off with the sports, I mean, coming fresh off of FSU. And
right.
You wrote, so you talk about lyrical journalism. My gosh, what you did with Kellam Hall, your first domicile when you were attending Florida State and its impending demise, along with Smith and that whole bunch of dormitories there. But what
Three months into it, I'm still finding my sea legs as a retired person. But the Democrat is still having me write one or two or three pieces a month. And so I'm keeping my hand in that way. I'm neither missing the day-to-day yet or totally out of the loop yet. So the I certainly enjoyed writing for the Democrat. I stumbled into journalism, and I'm so glad I did. And, I was – in fact, when I wrote that Kellam Hall thing story this past Sunday, a friend wrote me who had been an RA on the first floor. I've known him for about 20 years. I did not know him when I was at Kellam, but he was telling me about – being an RA, which is a resident advisor at Kellam Hall, and talking about that freshman year. And the freshman year for me was boring because I didn't know what to do. Today, FSU tries heavily to involve freshmen in many things so that they'll become a part of campus life. In 1969-70, I felt like it was a boring year. I did two main things. I played a lot of basketball, and I went to the student union and read old FSU yearbooks. Both of those became very valuable to me in that my basketball game got better. But I also acquired a deep love of Tallahassee history reading all those yearbooks. And as you mentioned right a minute ago, history, the Tallahassee history became sort of my touchstone in journalism. All my favorite stories have been writing about Tallahassee history. I did for 4 years. I did a weekly thing on how the streets got their names. I've done more than 75 columns on certain historical points. I'm very much in love with Tallahassee history. Part of that probably because I was an Air Force brat and had traveled all around and came to a town where the names on the streets, the names on the stores were of people and families who had been here forever. And I was always fascinated by that.
Well, it's fascinating also because so many people are kind of, do we call them parachute people? They pop in either to go to school or for a career, a brief stint, I'm thinking in state government is the way that a lot of people do that. And then, boom, they're gone to another place and they never really connect with this town, certainly not in the way that you have.
Right.
And do we miss something because we have so many transient people floating through here?
On the other hand, I think the other half of the population are people who come here not expecting to stay and fall in love with the place. I think all of us know dozens of people who came to school, never thought that they would stay here, thought they would go away and make their name and fortune, and in fact fell in love with Tallahassee and stayed here. And that's happened to several government people. I mean, there are numerous legislators from other parts of the state who have come up here, and then when their term was over, some of them became lobbyists, but many of them, whether they became lobbyists or not, found a way to keep working in Tallahassee because even in those 2 months, they became allured by the town.
Certainly a much different place than when you began with the Democrat in 1980.
The entire town has changed in the last 36 years, and the Democrats changed in the last 36 years. You look back and it seems a lot simpler, but it was a smaller and still growing town.
And Sally, you maintain that connection too, certainly through the university itself. But you have been, my gosh, a help to how many people in this community, whether it's through grief counseling or any of the other things that you do, and have really made a connection here as well.
Well, it's funny because I came in this is my 46th year teaching at Florida State. And not my first teaching job. And I'd love to tell you I started when I was five, but that's not true. And I was a Wisconsin girl. And I left everything I knew and came here to 5-inch palmetto bugs and, humidity. And I thought, I will never be able to get beyond the first year. And I was really wrong. And I stepped on a campus. I left a campus of 50,000 and stepped on a campus of what?
About
15,000, 18,000?
18,000.
Yeah. And I thought, what has happened? And I came from a major university hospital that was the cutting edge and went over. In fact, when I came, TMH and the FAMU hospital were still segregated. In fact, I first applied at FAM because I thought the hospital, the pediatric unit and OB unit were superior. And FAM is probably still laughing about my applying there. But and it was, in fact, within the first year, wasn't it, that M.T. Mushton did
71 or 72.
Yeah. M.T. Mushton, and this is an old story, but who was the CEO at TMH at the time.
The father of former city commissioner
right.
Mark Mushton.
Right. And he did an enlightened thing. When the FAMU hospital closed, because it just wasn't getting funding, but Al Brickler and his father-in-law were really kind of handling that in the public health department almost independently. When Mushton and the hospital closed and those nurses had to move to TMH, he did such a humane and clever thing. He brought those nurses over in the positions they were in when they left FAM. So if they were supervisors, they came as supervisors. If they were charge nurses, they came as charge nurses. And in fact, with the exception of some unruly, naughty patients, it was a really pretty smooth transition.
And yet to this day, there are some folks in the community that still look askance at MT because when he took over the administration
yes.
of Tallahassee Memorial, it was a segregated institution.
Oh, absolutely.
He presided over the mm-hmm. integration of it, but because
yep.
of that earlier time, there's still some folks that say, hey, he was somehow culpable or, you know, to blame for some of the things.
And by some folks, we don't necessarily just mean Ed Hollifield.
And maybe one or two more. I don't
yeah,
know.
Right.
But I don't have a lot of claim to fame, as you indicate, but one of my great memories and one of my great joys was MT said, when we integrate our first patient room, will you take care of both those patients? I was a faculty member, but I worked in the summer as just a nurse at TMH. And I remember two women, a black woman and a white woman. And I know people won't believe this, but Mrs. White, who was black, and Mrs. Black, who was white, that really happened, went in to have their gallbladders out. And all those women were concerned about is having their gallbladders out. And it was a smooth, very manageable moment. I felt honored that he thought I should take – that I could be part of that. And it was really – people don't remember. It could have been such an awful transition. And, in fact, it went really nicely. And I'm so excited about having been there to watch it.
I say that all the time. The greatest change that has happened in Tallahassee since I came here in 1969 is the improvement in racial relations. This truly was an old South town where the blacks were treated, if not poorly, then in a patronizing manner. And there was no – blacks all had simply menial and labor jobs except in the black community. And the growth to where we've had a black city manager, a black chief of police, a black fire chief, black mayors, has just been so great.
We're talking to Gerald Ensley and also Dr. Sally Kerioff. They are married, in case you didn't know. See, you learn something new every day here on Perspectives, and your input, welcome to 414-1234. We'll be right back. There is so much history to be had when it comes to Florida's capital city, and there are few folks of my acquaintance that know more about the capital city than Gerald Ensley, formerly full-time of the Tallahassee Democrat, now special. You're a special guy because it says right there, special to the Democrat
right.
in your latest stuff. And also Dr. Sally Kerioff here with us too. If you want to know anything about the history of Tallahassee, here's a good chance that you can connect with someone who will be able to answer that question or put you in the direction of someone who might be able to provide that answer. Talking about the race relations, though, Gerald, I thought it was fascinating when I moved down here, which was in 79, coming from the western part of Maryland, which was, I think, our indigenous African-American population was 1.7% of
right.
the entire
right.
county. And moved down here to Tallahassee, and there was an African-American city commissioner by the name of James Ford.
Right.
I was absolutely gobsmacked. I thought, what a progressive and a forward-thinking community. One of our municipal leaders is a black guy.
Right.
How cool was that?
Yeah. But he was the first. You probably didn't realize when you came, but he was the first, and it had been a struggle to get that first one. And when he was elected, there were no other blacks in significant positions in Tallahassee.
When did Aquilina come? When was she on the school board?
I take that back.
Right.
Some of them had there had been some blacks rise up in the school system.
Right. Aquilina Howell.
After the closure of Lincoln High.
Right.
And the integration of schools. It is well to note that Leon County was among the last places, all of Florida was among the last places to integrate their schools. while integration here began in the mid-60s with scattered students. I guess 63, you've got the three black students, Harold Knowles, Marilyn Hollifield, and Philip Hadley, who integrate Leon High. But full-scale integration didn't come here until 1970 by court order. Former Judge Harold Carswell, father of owner of the moon, Scott Carswell, Carswell had denied several petitions to fully integrate the schools, and finally took a ruling in 1970 before the schools were integrated. So then James Ford gets elected in 1971 or 72. And the floodgate, if they weren't floodgates then, they were at least a trickle. And then by the 80s, we started having floodgates and things changed.
Yeah, but one of your more controversial columns came out, I think, in September, and that was harkening back to the city election. Yes, the city of Tallahassee used to elect its own city commissioners before this case, and then turned it over to the county because it was such
a
mess.
You're talking about they ran their own elections, right? The Herb Seckel had been the city clerk, and in those days, the city commission, the city ran its own elections. The Leon County Supervisor of Elections did not run them, and Jack McLean was running for his first time, and he lost by 92 votes or some small number like that. And the charge was that Seckel had illegally manipulated the absentee ballots, had in fact sent people out to collect absentee ballots from people who hadn't requested them. And a suit was filed over that. The suit didn't go anywhere. 2 years later, Jack ran again and won. And that same year, Seckel resigned. The city commission then voted to turn over its elections to the supervisor elections. And yes, that was still a very – and that's actually 19 – That's early 80s.
So yep, it was 1982, February of 82 was that.
1982.
Because I actually came across – I'm trying to clean up the house. By the time I die, it's going to be beautiful. I can just feel –
No, it won't.
You know, no, you're probably right. Yeah. But I found an old air check, and this is – I think, Sally, when you were over and we were both working together at that point – where we had dispatched, you know, talk about FSU baseball, Jim Crosby, who was doing sports for us, dispatched him to City Hall because there was no one else.
Exactly.
Lee was doing something else that
day.
And I said, please tell us what's going on with the canvassing of the absentee ballots.
Right.
And Jim, typical, gets on and took a 30-second story and he made it 5 minutes long.
Right, right.
You know, well, I came up in the elevator with Judd Chapman and he told me
that – hand. And it was a nice day.
But he was going through all the alleged chicanery that may have occurred there. But after Herb Seckel died, you came out with a column that kind of characterized that as the last gasp of the good old boy network. I know some people got really upset with you, particularly the Seckel family over there.
The Seckel family was very upset. Yeah, I was going to mention it if you didn't. And it is – no one wants to hear bad things about their parents. No one wants to hear bad things about their father. And I understand their grief, and I have no problem with their being upset because I would be grief-stricken too. But the facts are the facts. Even though this lawsuit, Jack McLean's lawsuit, was denied, the city commission essentially acknowledged that Seckel had done wrong. And the fact that he resigned and was asked to resign – indicates that he had done wrong. And Herb Seckel was a wonderful guy, but he still had the values that he was raised in. And there's no other way to put it. I think he feared having a black man get elected if he thought there was a way around it.
Is that the hardest thing about particularly being a community columnist? Because on one hand, you know, everybody knows you, or at least you know just about everybody, and you want to give full vent to the truth as you see it. But still, you know, sometimes someone's going to get hurt on that.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, yes, you got to write what you're going to write and let chips fall where they may and take whatever criticism comes with it. I know Sally and our daughter Amanda are often upset by the criticism that I've engendered, and they take it personal when it's directed at me. But you know,
he never, ever rises to it. People call on the phone that they're going to kill him, and I'll pick up the phone and say, why don't you just not read him instead of killing him?
Yeah.
It seems like such an extreme response to a column. And he will say, stop that. I mean, there are times he writes, well, they now that they have social media, we'll show a picture of our house with a bullseye on it. Mm. I mean, crazy stuff. Just don't read him, folks. He never rises to that. He never fires back. He never says, look at all the hate mail. It is stunning. And what you were saying, of course, is facts are facts. They're not your opinion. Those are facts. You cannot like those facts. And we see, I'm not going to get into politics, we see lots of people not liking facts because it's so much easier to get the simple response rather than one that takes energy. But he never, ever, as long as I have known him, has become overwhelmed with the vitriolic stuff that happens.
I just read an interesting line yesterday, I guess. Americans are people tied to the myth of the way they think it is.
Yeah. Versus the way it is, right.
The great American mythology, I don't know if we
We don't want to start on that. But what, time after time, the Republicans are going to take this country back. Back from what? What the heck?
When you could be mean?
How is the world any worse than it was 10 years ago? People have opinions you don't like that you hear about that you didn't hear about 10 years ago. But there's nothing to take this nation back from. It's still the same as it's always been, a place of many different types of people doing many different types of things, with the vast majority of them trying to do the best they can.
But now we have the ability for each of us to carve out our own little echo chamber to a greater degree, certainly, than before when you had to read the Democrats, you had to watch Channel 6. We hoped you watch, you know, PBS over here on then Channel 11. But you had a limited number of media outlets to reinforce or to contradict what you thought. Now you can put yourself in
the
a
middle of
bubble.
It. Oh, yes.
And you hear your own thoughts and opinions echoed back to you constantly.
You know, Tom, here's what I have to say when I start class. If you don't want to be uncomfortable, this is not the class for you. Because we are going to talk about things that make you uncomfortable, because that's what I think college is about. We're going to talk about what you think happens after you die. And all of you are going to have a different opinion. And you are going to be tolerant. And you are going to listen to other people talk. And you are not going to personalize it. And if that's not the class for you, drop it today. I'll sign the slip. But college is for things that you need to discuss and recognize the luxury that we get to do it without my being dragged off or you being tortured or our being not allowed to do it. So drop it today. Oh, now I'm mad about it all.
We'll ramp it back. 414-1234 for Perspectives. Let's hook up with Gerald there on line one. Hey, Gerald, welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, Tom.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, Gerald.
Uh-huh.
I'm another Gerald.
I get that.
Yeah, you wrote about me some years ago. I've followed your writing since before that when you were, sort of understudying Bill McGrotha.
And a fine understudy it was.
Yeah, it was.
I love Bill. I miss him. He died in 1993. Wrote for the Telegraph for 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, you moved from sports writing seamlessly into other types of writing. And at one point, I was the subject of something that you wrote. I taught at FAMU for about 19 years.
Gerald Gee?
That's the one.
Uh-huh.
That's the one, the infamous, I guess.
Yeah, at that time, you were.
I said something that riled some people and came to discover that college really wasn't the place to talk about things that are uncomfortable.
And that's unfortunate because, as Sally just said, that's what college ought to be about.
Well, that's what I thought, too, at the time and still do. But there's a lot of intolerance floating around campuses still.
Yes.
Gerald, let me ask you, because there have been so many articles out on this that students becoming angry about being culturally marginalized, and some of these, you say one thing and, oh, you're being insensitive, and they're calling for the dismissal of, well, you know, you've been through that too, of faculty members or administrators. Do you think it has gotten even worse since you went through what you went through?
Yes, it has. And that is truly unfortunate.
I think it's the clamor of what Tom just talked about, the clamor of so many voices. Everyone has a platform now. And I think even if the majority does not feel differently, the fact that you can hear the other side so often creates the impression that there's this opposition to some of the things being said. I think that's the problem with social media, is it creates the impression that people are upset, maybe more than they are.
Mm-hmm. It's like a megaphone.
Yes.
It is like a megaphone. It's one of the reasons I really struggle with social media when there's been a death, and anyone can post anything about who has died
And many insensitive things.
Right, insensitive things. I have a client, a patient, who learned about her son's suicide before she did on social media. And then they can post stories and say whatever they want if they didn't like them. I really, really struggle with grief and social media. And yet there are some wonderful things that Facebook can go off forever, or memory sites can go on, or candles can be lit on anniversaries. There are some good things, but there are some very heinous things that happen when people are already grieving.
It's gotten harder than ever to separate fact from fiction, and so many people making so many things up.
Yes.
Well, Gerald, I recall your situation, too. Thank you so much for checking in there and hoping everything is well with you. Well, Gerald, out of the thousands, literally thousands of writings that you've done over the years, are there any that just stand out? You go, oh, that was it. That was me. Probably more than most.
First, you need to know, Tom, that he's the most celebrated and awarded writer. He has, and I think this is not
in the history of the world.
In the history of the galaxy. Yeah. And no one knows that. But certainly in the history of the Democrat. He has 50 writing awards. And after he had retired, he still got one or two more, a first in column writing. And so he really is the person to ask what was
that. I'd have married that girl.
No. Yeah.
I think you did.
Here's the answer to your question there, Tom. At the time, there's many things that I've written. I've said, yes, I nailed it. But afterwards, no. I mean, I've written literally tens of thousands of stories and columns, and all, you know.
Except yesterday he was reading something he wrote, and he said, I'll be darned.
He did.
This was just yesterday about Joe Williams when he was a basketball coach.
Many times I'll go back, and I'll be reading in the files, and I'll come across a story, and I'll go, blah, 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 blah. And I'll say, who wrote this? I wrote it. I have no memory of writing it, you know. But most times I go back and look at it, I go, dang, I could have done that one better. In this particular case, looking at the story I wrote about Joe Williams' resignation, which happened on the day of the Challenger explosion, I was amazed that it held up. Yeah.
That's the best you'll say. It held up.
That's the highest accolade you can give probably to any writing.
Right.
You know. Let's see if Greg can join us here before the next break. He's online, too, here on Perspectives. Hey, Greg.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great. Thanks for calling, man.
Good. I just wanted to say, first of all, I really enjoy the show. I love listening to a show about local Tallahassee issues and discussion, so just want to put that out there. But I also wanted to tell Mr. Gerald that I really enjoyed the local names articles that he put in the Tallahassee Democrat. I thought it was really great to be able to learn about, you know, the history of something so close to you through something that you drive by every day. Just, you know, seeing a road sign and then all of a sudden that road sign or that location means so much more. And that was really an awesome experience. So I just wanted to say thanks for that.
I appreciate it, Greg. Writing those street name stories is one of the most favorite things I ever did. There's no question about it. I feel the same way. Where'd that name come from?
And they are clamoring for a book, Tom.
Well, they sure are.
Everyone we meet.
And I think people would be amazed, Gerald, to know just how much. Sometimes it's real easy. You bump into someone who is immediately accessible and they say, oh, well, here's the story on that. Mm-hmm. And you get a confirmation and you go with it. But in some cases, you've got tons of research that you got to do and dozens of people to try to figure out where did this
exactly
come from.
Exactly. I used to call them my white whales, trying to find the information on names that there was no information. There is no requirement by the city or the county that you explain why you've named a street a certain way. You can sometimes the city commission or county commission put the name down there. Mostly they're put down by developers or even more so they're put down 150 years ago and nobody wrote down why. You know, so there was certain streets I chased forever before finding and some I chased and did not find. One of them finally got solved was Fred George. I knew Fred George owned a farm and I knew that he had been a game warden. But Sean Rossman, a reporter recently, connected with his granddaughter and got more information.
Well, I remember the day that you called over to the then Centel, the old telephone company,
right,
to try to find out about the etymology of Blair Stone.
So many people thought that was a one name.
One
that,
name.
But that was two names. That was the name of the man who was president of Centel in the early days.
Yeah, I remember that. Let's see if we can get in Jason. He's on line four. Hey, Jason, welcome to Perspectives.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I heard Carol mention that you were here in 1969.
Yep.
Do you remember the old Centennial Field baseball park?
Absolutely. Centennial Field came down in 74, and it's where Cascades Park is now. It was the South Monroe side of Cascades Park.
That's right. I was wondering if FSU, I know Little League played there sometimes, but I wondered if FSU practiced there. Or
FSU played its first three seasons of football at Centennial Field. 47, 48, and 49, 1950, Campbell Stadium opens. In fact, Bobby Bowden was quarterback for the opposing team, Howard, when the first game was played at Campbell Stadium. But, yes, FSU played three seasons of football in the outfield, as did Leon High.
Anything else you want to know, Jason?
That's all. I was here in 1970, and I remember Centennial Field.
Yes, sir. And part of that original wall is still there.
They saved the home plate and left field side.
Yeah, but the rest is now Cascades Park. You're in tune with Gerald Enley and Dr. Sally Carioth, life partners in crime, if you will, here on Perspectives. And we're talking local history of Florida's gorgeous capital city and one of the greatest historical minds to wrap itself around this area. 414-1234 is the number to call, 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. We are talking Tallahassee history with one of the best minds in the biz, which is Gerald Enley, late of the Tallahassee Democrat and now a special contributor to that same paper. Before we go back to the phones, Roy wants your take on a phrase that has just exploded in common usage right now because we're hearing it all over the political airwaves, which is political correctness. Number one, can we define it? And number two, what's the deal with it?
I think Kareem Jabbar wrote a beautiful article a few months ago in Time Magazine, and he said, if you mean that political correctness is wrong, I'm not going to. He was trying to say that political correctness is an attempt to eliminate improper criticism. Of things, and improper stereotyping. And I wish I had him from it. He expressed it beautifully why political correctness is not evil, you know, and I feel the same way. Is there times where you say to yourself, oh, that's a bit much, you know, certainly. But the essential part of political correctness is trying to find a way to talk about people and to people
Without being mean.
Without being mean.
Yeah. I heard a focus group the other day say, I hate that. I can't say what I want to say. So you hate that you can't say mean things people?
Right.
Is that what you hate?
There's this
and she called it political correctness.
Here's the belief with Donald Trump. Oh, he's so brave because he says what he thinks.
Which is mean and racist and bigotry.
Yes, and not only that.
But we're not going to talk about this, Jerry.
But beyond that is the fact that a certain amount of socialness is being polite. We may see people who are too fat or wearing bad clothes, but politeness keeps us from saying something. That's a form of political correctness because it's a form of good manners.
And because we live in a world where we have to get along.
Right.
We don't get to say mean things about people.
The idea that
it hurts their feelings or hurts them. Why would we want to be able to do that?
The idea that we can say anything we darn well please is crazy because it's not good manners. I mean, it's just simply that some of this is about observing good manners. And if that becomes politically correct, then fine. I don't care what you call it.
Well, it's sort of like the old – the golden rule aspect. And maybe right. the parameters like that. Of that have shifted as well. But if I wouldn't want you to say it to me, why would I say it to
Absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, Tom. Right. Well put. Well put.
Yeah, I think that it's acculturation. We live in a world that's gotten too big to worry about – You don't get to say whatever you want.
Right. It's not admirable for someone to just to say whatever exists in the meanest part of their heart.
Right.
Trump is not a hero because he's saying
the mean things
that may have occurred to all of us.
But
we don't say them.
Yeah, well, I grew up with a little – and you probably did, Sally, too, and probably you, Gerald. You know, every neighborhood had a little neighborhood bar down at the end of the block. And you know,
I grew up in Wisconsin. Yeah, they had
right.
10 bars.
That's right. In the middle of the block, too. But we kids weren't, of course, supposed to go into them. But we snuck in anyway just to see what the grown-ups were all about. It was so dark and smoky and crazy. And there would invariably be a guy at the end of the bar who was spewing, you know, all of this drunken rant. And at first it was entertaining, but after a while you thought, this is a very sad guy.
Right.
He's not happy.
Unless someone else is unhappy, unless he's being mean to someone. It is – my parents, of course, wouldn't have let me say anything mean without sitting me down and saying, you can't say that, honey. That's unkind. We don't say those things about people.
Mm-hmm. Well, but we can't agree with everyone, but let's see. I think Jeff has a point of disagreement there in line, too. Let's go to him first, guys. Hey,
Absolutely.
Jeff, welcome to Perspectives.
I'm talking about fat people. and I'm glad there's people from up north, too. I'm a Jersey guy who came here in 1966 with no intention of staying, and I'm still here.
I told you, it's contagious.
And Gerald and I have always disagreed about one of his idols, and that's Malcolm Johnson. I thought him was a right-wing nut, and Gerald didn't agree. But the thing Gerald has to admit is that people like me make him look moderate. So that's why he's still walking on the street.
The thing about this part of Malcolm that I fell in love with was what he wrote about Tallahassee and what he wrote about nature. His political views would be different than mine, certainly. But Malcolm helped me fall in love with this town because he wrote often about the history of it and about the nature of it. I mean, it's hard to believe now, but I don't know. There used to be a time when everybody didn't think about trees, and Malcolm introduced me to a lot of the nature and climate of Tallahassee as well as its history.
Gerald, one thing that just came out this morning before you and Sally came over, a group called the Kinsey Survey came out with a rather discouraging look at the contemporary state of newspapers in the U.S. We know all the changes that the Democrats been through of late, but – really, we haven't been impacted as much as so many, you know, big names like the Philadelphia Inquirer right. and, you know, the Boston Globe and all of these. The circulation just plummeting and ad revenues are just dropping through the floorboards, and it does not paint a very optimistic picture for the future there. Without institutions that are able to support – dare we call it legitimate journalism, but where you have fact-checking and where you have editors and you have that kind of thing, and where the ability now is for everyone to essentially be their own publisher and spew out whatever the heck they want. What does that mean for the future of really information in an era of information overload where it's everywhere?
I say all the time I think that newspapers will survive in a – probably a vastly different look that maybe, yes, the printed paper will go away. But you will always have to have organizations who do what you just said, and that is gather the news and do some kind of fact-checking on it and serve as a conduit of the information. I mean, one of the things we talked about for years in the 80s and 90s was citizen journalism, people all putting out their own thing. Well, the thing about that is people – there are people who will cover the things that interest them or that are fun, but you've got to have somebody cover the non-fun things and stick with them. It takes a lot of work to – right here in Tallahassee, we're dealing with the Chamber of Commerce and the EDC split. I mean, it takes a professional organization and professional reporters to stick with that over the course of many days, weeks, months – to get to the bottom of it. A citizen is not going to do that. You may have one burst of interest in it, or you may have one thing to say about it, but you have to have organizations dedicated to reporting the news in a neutral sense. And I know, left-wing newspapers, that's not so. They're reporting it in a neutral sense.
Mm-hmm. And folks, you have not lived until you have endured city and county and school board meetings for years and years and years. Because
right.
it is not riveting 99.8% of the time.
You've got to have somebody willing to go down there and sit there every week, yes.
Let's see, who do we have? Erman here on line 5, been patiently waiting on Perspectives. Hi, welcome.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Well, I am a fifth-generation North Floridian, a native of Tallahassee, and I was raised in Quincy. And I have enjoyed the Democrat for years and years. It used to come in the afternoon. I love McGrath's stories, and I would like for Gerald to publish his stories. And I have really enjoyed listening to your conversation this morning.
Well, thank you so much for the feedback. Appreciate it. Have you contemplated that, Gerald?
I've certainly contemplated it. It's a matter of doing the work. I've saved all my stories. I need to put them into a book. I need to find someone interested in publishing it. You know, so eventually, I assume I will do a book. Yes.
Oh, well, okay, you guys who have been on Perspectives in the past, all you book guys, and you were self-publishing and all that, give us a call right here and help Gerald out, and let's get this thing in print here.
Here's one thing I wonder too: if the future of that kind of thing is not a website as opposed to a hardcover book. So I don't know.
Yeah. Oh man,
I think about it all the time.
Worth Amanda and Gerald and I are readers. We, you know, we're cranking out 100 books that we look at. Just the thought of cracking a book and the first page and then the last page. There's just
– Oh, you boy, traditionalist.
I know it.
She's not that much traditional. She reads the last page first.
Well, yeah. I just don't want to get too involved with characters that are going to die.
I got to ask you, Joe, where did the nickname Perk come from?
When I was a baby, I cried like a coffee pot.
Here's how he cried. I'm going to do it for him. This happened. His mother had three children, one and under. And Gerald Perk was born in Japan. And so here's this woman with three children on the age. He has twin sisters. And here is how he cried from day one. And his name has stuck with him ever since. And his dad said, that kid cries like a percolator. And his mother called him Perk, and the girls call him Perk, and anyone that knows him well has called him Perk ever since.
See, all will be revealed, Gerald. There's no escape here. Harry's on line one. He's got a little history query to throw here. Harry's gone. He claimed, before you zap it here, guys, Harry claimed that the ditch that runs behind Northwood Mall used to be a creek and wanted to know if you had any insight on
yes,
that.
Yes, it was called Reed's Creek, I believe, and Cliff Paisley, the late historian Cliff Paisley, used to maintain that that's where Andrew Jackson's army came across when they were coming west on their way to Lake Miccosukee in 1818 in the First Seminole War. He claims, in fact, on Charter Oak Drive, which is, if any of you know, is right off Monroe, he claims there's the big oak tree there is where Jackson met some Indian chiefs and talked with them. Calvin Jones, a late state archaeologist, used to maintain that Jackson may have passed through there. He doesn't think that and he thinks there may have been a Seminole village there, but he's not sure that was the main Seminole village, which was Cliff's contention. Calvin maintained it was probably down near DeSoto's site there.
Okay, because that would not be easy going. That area around Monticello, I think, is one of the steepest grades in
yes.
Tallahassee.
Well, Cliff did point to a guy. It's named Reed's Creek, I think, because that was the name of the lieutenant who wrote the report that Cliff based his studies on. But it was a creek for a long time. I think people who grew up here will remember it as a creek. It got turned into what we call it, stormwater ditch now. So
yeah. Okay, Walter's online, too. Let's see if we can get to him here on Perspectives. Hey, Walter.
Hey, how are y'all?
Hey, we're doing good. Thanks.
Good. Gerald, first of all, good health to you and Dr. Sally, and I bet y'all wish you were in Wisconsin this time of year.
32 below when my sister walked her dog this morning in St. Paul.
You know, yesterday we were playing at Capital City, and he used to be the U.S. attorney here. And he was asking about the history of the club and everything. And I looked at him and I said, I wish you would have read some of Gerald Inslee's columns about this place through the years and what it was about. And I turn on the radio and here you are. So, we were talking about you yesterday. And again, it segues with all the history you've done about this area. And I told the guy, I said, yeah, if you'd read his columns, you'd know more about this kind of, and they're about to go back to private here March 1st. So
oh, they got enough members. I understood the idea was that they would go private when they got enough members, and I guess they have, huh?
Yeah, they have. They're letting us common folk play on Wednesdays, and the course is in great shape, as always. And
yep, the new company's done a world of good out there.
Yeah, it's they've done some work with the drainage and everything, so it's coming around. And I spunk it up. The course record is still intact.
Well, good. Yeah, Capital City, yeah, as you, has a long history. I mean, really, it starts at the Grove about 1904 when a golf club was organized. Then in 1919, I guess they built the first nine where it is now today. You know, then controversy begins in the 30s when they take advantage of a federal loan to expand to 18 holes. And it was a private club when they expanded 18 holes, but they used a federal grant. Gee, it's like those guys in Oregon who hate the federal government, but will take everything they can give them. But in any case, and then, of course, you know, in 1956, the private club, in an effort to keep out blacks, signs a $1 a year lease with the city and rents the land. The lease will expire when we're all dead. But
that was quite the hub back in the day, and I think I made a statement that this was the country club that they belonged to, and that it excluded African Americans.
Yes, indeed.
Safe journeys and good travels to yourself and good health, buddy.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Walter.
You really appreciate that, Walter. Yeah, and I think the only thing that hasn't changed at Capital City Country Club over the years is the fried chicken. I think that's been pretty much a staple of the whole operation there. Gerald, with all the background and historical underpinnings that you have, reason for optimism as our city kind of lurches into certainly a larger and a little bit more metropolitan future than we've had in the past?
Yes, indeed. I think the thing Tallahassee still has going forward is heavy involvement by the citizens. And I am a firm believer that all public officials, that 99% of public officials intend nothing but the best. I've always said a bureaucrat is just another name for expert. I do believe that city and county officials try very hard to do the best by Tallahassee. People always say, oh, the city just did this and they're out to get me. No, they're not out to get you. Decisions have to be made. You know, many ideas are proffered. Somebody has to make a decision. As a decision is made, it's intended to be in the interest of the most people. Sometimes it's not in the interest of every person. But, we're going through a little disruption right now with the new city manager and all that. I've been contemplating a column on that. And disruption is the name of the game in today's world. And disruption is just another name for change. And change on the whole is good, even if it's just sideways change. You know, the old saying is that change for change's sake is stupid. Nah, I don't think so. I think change gives somebody else's ideas a chance to come to the fore. And if that change doesn't work, well, we got more right down the road from it. You know, so I think disruption is the name of the game and probably for the best.
Okay, let's see if we can squeeze Gary in here before we have to jump out of here. Hi, Gary. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really love the show.
Hi, Gare.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, Gary Yordan, the all-time best, next to Tom Flanagan, radio host you've ever had.
Oh, darn, we lost the call. Oh, well, anyway.
Who are you giving those two props and not me?
First of all, I have loved the show. You guys are great. And this Sally duplicating the cry was a classic. I just want to – I'm offering my time, Perk. I'll volunteer. If you decide to write the book, I want to write I want to come up with the title. I'm volunteering my skills.
Okay, I better keep that in mind.
So, I got 18 different ideas already in my head.
I was going to say, everything starts with the title.
Really enjoyed the show today, guys. It was really entertaining. Very nice.
Thank you, Gary.
Really appreciate it, Gary. Yeah, another integral part of Tallahassee history
Gary is the greatest MC you could ever ask for. He's one. Scott Atwell. Gary Yordan and
Mark Ziegler, too.
And Mark Ziegler, or just natural MC.
And do not forget your old Democrat colleague, Mark Hinson.
Absolutely. Those four.
Those four can step up and talk about anything, any event. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yes, long after the guests leave, they'll still be talking about it. Folks, I wish we could keep on talking here, too. It has been a blast. Gerald Ensley, late of the Tallahassee Democrat, but still regular contributor and such a phenomenal historical mind. You just keep on doing what you're doing, sir.
I appreciate that.
And Dr. Sally Kerioth, always a delight to have you on the air. Well, maybe we'll get you your own show again. How would that work?
That'd be grand.
Thanks, guys. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls doing all the button pushing and all today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. You know, one of the most exciting and inspiring athletic contests imaginable coming up soon. It's this year's Special Olympics. We'll have some organizers and athletes joining us. Hope you can join us again for that next week right here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.